listening to Real Talk on RCR, Reality Check Radio.
You're on Reality Check Radio, Real Talk with Rodney Hyatt. It's so great to be back. Oh my goodness, I have missed, I feel every one of you being away. And I got back 2 days ago, so I'm over my jet lag. I still feel as though I'm standing upside down or something. You know how you do when you travel. But I had a wonderful trip, which I should talk to you about. But right now, when we had COVID, I think the greatest heroes were the New Zealand doctors speaking out on behalf of science, because no one risked more or took more damage or were hurt more simply by asking questions and, of course, as we now know, telling the truth. And they're still being attacked. When the history is written, they will stand peerless as the heroes and heroines of COVID, and every other medical professional will be ashamed of their own cowardice. I think we're going to look back on it in terms of, what did you do in the war, Dad? Did you go along with it or did you stand up? Well, the New Zealand doctor speaking out on behalf of science stood up. Bravest thing I've ever seen here in New Zealand, to be honest. And we're very, very blessed to have along with us today, from Doctor Speaking on Behalf of Science, Anna McLaughlin, their communications lady, who makes their newsletters and reports accessible for dunces like me. Good morning, Anna.
Good morning, Rodney. Thanks for having me.
You must pinch yourself every day working where you do.
I genuinely do. It's such a privilege and such an honour to work with these incredible individuals. So what you see in front of everybody and what you see behind the scenes, they're the same people. They're just as extraordinary when nobody's watching as they are when everybody can see them. So it's a genuine, I love it every day.
Is there something about the doctors that's a characteristic that they have that means that they have spoken out?
I would say, judging by the scrutiny that they face consistently every day through the media, social media, and the governing bodies of New Zealand, that the one thing I've noticed across the board is the genuine courage within themselves to be able to make such a stand, but also the genuine passion for upholding the Hippocratic Oath of first do no harm, and really wanting to uphold informed consent for patients, I think, as well.
It's extraordinary, isn't it? Because I haven't needed to go to a doctor since COVID, but boy, I'd have to be pretty jolly sick to go to one, because I am so absolutely disappointed in them. And I imagine your doctor speaking out on behalf of science, I imagine that when they spoke up, that expected hundreds and thousands of their colleagues to join them. And they didn't. And the leaders of the profession, so-called, turned on these brave souls to destroy them. And they never recanted. That's like you read about in history.
Sure is.
And it was happening around us, and you don't see it at the time until you look back in hindsight and you say, jeepers creepers, they were alone. I love them. Because no one could know what they would do in the same circumstance.
Mm.
And you'd have to assume that you'd be one of the scaredy cats and cowards, because that's what everyone else did. I mean, yeah. You think you would be brave, but 99% of doctors folded easy. The other thing I should say is, I think I said this when you rang up when we were trialing talkback, I feel so embarrassed because I regarded COVID stuff as nonsense from day one, but I had a view that Dr. Matt Shelton was kooky. I'd never met the guy, didn't know him from Adam, didn't even particularly read the articles, but probably glance the headlines, and you realise how propaganda against a person works.
Yes.
And then I heard him interviewed, and he was so absolutely wonderful. And I was embarrassed, because I realised that we form our opinions so superficially and how it's shaped by the media, right? And he had been painted as a kook, and I just absorbed that somewhere in the dark recesses of my brain. And then I heard him speak. And again, I always feel I should write him a long letter apologizing. Not that he knows me particularly, but it's so amazing how the media worked against such seriously wonderful, seriously smart, seriously honorable people.
It really is. I think judging it from a communications perspective and watching the lockstep action across the world, there was hundreds of billions of dollars poured into consistent repetition of specific phrasing and yes. colors and tone and language. And I think that when the media with the Public Interest Journalism Fund, the government enforced those key messages to the public consistently
yeah.
from before we even had those lockdowns in 2020. And when people are consistently exposed to specific messaging with that neuro-linguistic programming and manipulation and persuasion through the creative communication, I think it's very, very difficult to be able to sift through the noise and find the truth. But it's also very, very important to take a step back and to be able to do that even when times are pretty crazy. But
yes.
Yeah, they definitely painted him in an awful light. They turned up at his house and took photos of him without him knowing, that type of thing. It was pretty horrendous, to be honest.
And it wasn't like he was a politician under scrutiny. You know what I mean? He was a private citizen and a professional. What's your background, Anna, in terms of communications?
I actually, I have the same degree as Ardern from the same university a few years behind her. Yeah, so I understand the tactics.
How embarrassing.
Yeah.
Do you think they taught her that stuff?
Oh, absolutely.
Because you tend to think that someone that's doing stupid policies is stupid, but it was amazingly clever. She achieved more as prime minister than any other prime minister I can imagine in our history. She took New Zealand so far down with having people idolise her. It was extraordinary in hindsight. It was amazingly manipulative.
I feel, looking back on how I've been trained, communications is the art of manipulation and persuasion through words and art and audio messaging type of thing. So it is a way to connect with people, and you're trained. I mean, back then the internet was there and used all the time, but social media wasn't prevalent. But now it's to be able to create meaningful connection through those digital channels. And through the COVID response, it was used to control our population so clearly.
And it was hypnotic, wasn't it?
It absolutely was, yes.
I listen to Scott Adams actually usually every day. I don't know if you know him. He's a cartoonist, but he's also a trained hypnotist. And he analyzes the news each day on the basis of persuasion. And he's provided me with a remarkable insight, because it's not just, well, it's the way I ended up thinking poorly of Dr. Shelton. It wasn't a rational response. It was a psychological programming that had been repeated and repeated, and I'd glance through the headlines each day and without thinking had formed a view. And of course, I was aware that they were doing that in politics when I was there, but it was very amateurish compared to now. And the media still had a view that they had to provide some balance. Over the Ardern years, they just jumped to another level where they were cultish-like, and, well, they're like doctors. They just walked away from every principle that they should be standing for.
Mm.
Where did you work overseas? Which countries?
In South Korea.
Wow.
Yes, and I've done a bit of work with some wonderful Japanese people up in northern Japan as well.
Why Korea? That's an odd place.
I was working with this woman who set up a New Zealand curriculum primary school, but she needed someone to manage the relationships and things with the people who arrived over there and manage the staff and all that sort of communication type thing.
So you lived in Korea?
Yes, back and forth for a couple of years.
Did you love it?
Absolutely loved it. It's a wonderful place. And the food is incredible.
It's incredible. And 60% of the population or something live in Seoul. It's like quite rural and very heavily. I spent a few days there and I loved it. And the food is the best food I think I've ever had in a country.
Yep, I'd agree.
And you can't imagine until you go there the constant fear of a North Korean invasion that they feel. Did you not feel that?
So I was living in a town where the army was based on the opposite side from Seoul, and they didn't have a fear of that. They didn't speak of North Korea very often. It was a taboo subject, actually. And they, when I happened to be there in 2017, when Trump said that he's got a big red button to push and
for the Rocket Man.
Yes, people are saying, you've got to get out of there, you've got to get out of there. But it was actually, there was no inherent danger because for North Korea to invade in that realm with the US so present with their military there, it would be catastrophic for North Korea, to be honest. Yeah. So they didn't have a huge issue there, but they do military exercises every September, which causes it to pop up in the media most years.
I have read some great books about the Korean War, and you should read them.
I should.
Because it was an amazing battle, and American military were pushed right down to the bottom of Korea.
Wow.
And we're going to lose it. And I think it was General Ridgway. I might have the name wrong. He was brought in. And they used napalm. I think they killed an estimated 1 million Chinese soldiers and pushed them all the way back. That's why the Chinese never went into Vietnam. They did as a proxy. But they didn't put their soldiers in. That's what they say. But it was a staggering war because it was lost. And Douglas MacArthur was fired. And then he came back upset, and he was going to, it was a constitutional crisis because he was challenging the president and was going to take over America. It was like literally a coup. It was an astonishing time. And all that was over Korea, and we think of it as a skirmish. It was huge.
Certainly was.
You came back and worked in local government?
Yes.
For a council?
Yes.
Or several?
A couple of councils, yes.
And then COVID hit.
Yes, COVID hit, and I had just started at Tauranga City Council and the mandates hit, so yeah.
And you wouldn't take the jab?
No.
Why not?
Well, I have a lot of medical allergies and I've had anaphylaxis to medications before, and I felt that it was not for me, to be perfectly honest, and I felt that that would have been a very logical choice. However, I went to my GP and I said, I've got concerns about this. And she said, look, this is 100% safe. You're going to be absolutely fine. There's no issue. But what we'll do is we'll give you the injections here, and we will have, if you go into anaphylaxis, we'll have everything ready for you to get you out of anaphylaxis. And I thought, oh, okay, that's a really unusual thing to do. And then she said, and if you have anaphylaxis to the first shot, we will get you into hospital. We still recommend that you have the second shot because we don't know how people's bodies are going to respond to this virus. And I thought to myself, this is a really unusual thing, because when I had anaphylaxis to a simple anti-nausea drug, they weren't going to ever give it to me again. It's on all my medical records. You don't give it to me. And I've never heard of a medical professional recommending, if you have an anaphylactic reaction, we're still recommending you have the same drug a second time over and potentially the boosters. Because you wouldn't do that for someone who has a peanut allergy.
No.
Here's a peanut for a second time, and we'll just give you the crash carts in hospital. It was an unusual time.
Is that the first time you had questioned authority? Like up till then, you trusted doctors?
Well, I've seen some of my family members have had atrocious experiences in the medical profession over my life, and I have witnessed a lot of gaslighting and things like that.
Okay.
Yes, but it was the first time I had outwardly expressed concern and then also challenged authority, yes. However, from the get-go of COVID, I knew there was something suspect.
Did you equivocate or did you think no?
I actually went looking for an excuse to have the jabs because of the pressure. I was told, oh, well, you're stealing beds off cancer patients, you're disrespecting society, you're going to kill your grandparents, all that kind of jazz. You're not part of that team of 5 million. So I did actually go looking for a reason to have it. I found none. I went with that same appointment with my GP. I said, could you please provide me the trial data? I want to see the data of the safe and effective that I've been told. I can't find it anywhere else. And all she could provide me was the biased Pfizer data. And by that stage, I'd already looked into their history and seen that they'd had the biggest criminal payout for misrepresenting their medications prior, and I didn't trust what they said. And then I said, could you please show me the long-term data on this injection? And she said, I'm really sorry, there is none.
She'd be thinking you're a kook by then, wouldn't she?
She called me vaccine hesitant on my file.
That's a polite word.
Yeah.
Because I just think working for the council and doing what you do, you're sort of like a professional, successful, ambitious. It's not like some clapped-out old politician saying, no, stick it up your bum. You're at the start of your career, if you know what I mean. I had no cost to saying I'm not doing that, right? I almost would do it for fun just to, you know, not to comply. There's no consequence to me much. The small things were an irritant to me. So when I see people like yourself, I'm fascinated by the decision because, again, I don't know what I would do. So you then go back to the council and you say, look, I'm very, very sorry. I love working here, but I've got a little issue because I'm anaphylactic and I'm not comfortable and nothing that I've seen and I've looked suggests this will be a safe move for me. In fact, my doctor said X, Y, Z that, you know, I'll get one and if I blow out, they'll have a crash cart and next time they'll have two crash carts. What did the council say, your bosses?
At the time, I was mandated off-site anyway, just because if you weren't vaccinated, you weren't allowed on council property at all. I did actually, I went to the head of HR and I emailed the executive team and I explained my situation and I said, there are other people in this situation and we're not conspiracy theorists. We're not sitting around jumping down dark rabbit holes on the dark side of the internet, which everybody assumes you are. And I really implore you to think carefully about the consequences of the decisions that you're about to make. They actually, so I actually resigned before anything went on. And in the end, they didn't end up mandating that specific council, which was good. They only mandated out certain positions. So I left before I could be fired. But
it's funny because you don't think in hindsight you should have been fired and then you'd have a claim.
Yes, potentially, but I had watched my friend. She was fired with one day's notice and evacuated off-site. When she had to drop her computer off and stuff at sort of a drop-off point. And when they fired this person, they laughed at her. And for me, I watched the recording of that meeting and it was actually genuinely, it was gut-wrenching to see professionals who understood emergency processes and things like that to laugh at someone who also has similar allergies to myself. So I wasn't prepared to put myself through that kind of scrutinous process, I guess.
Because that's something else that we forget, how quickly and how nasty our friends, family members, neighbours, work colleagues got at pointing the finger. Extraordinary. There is a nasty streak in us.
Yes.
Up until then, I'd lived in an age where I thought, you know, we'd never have anything bad happen to New Zealand because the people are basically decent. You know how you read of everyone rushes to Hitler and the Nazis, but there's been many, many examples. That would never happen because we're enlightened and we're clever and we're decent. Man, it was like turning a switch.
Yes.
And all rounding in like schoolyard bullies, pointing at the little kid on the ground and jeering at them is what happened.
Mm. What I noticed is that through the repetition, they used that kind of groupthink manipulation of the big group over here is the one that is the right group. It's the single source of truth group, and it's the one who is safe. So people have an innate desire or need, I guess, from the caveman days to be part of a group, to be safe, yes, because our survival depended on it. And I guess that people were manipulated so early on and set up. And I've analysed communications since the last 20 or so years. You watch the way that the media presents stories. And we've been set up over a very, very long period of time to be connected to that group think and that hive mind and to go to a larger, safer group. And the people who stood up, they were isolated and made to feel alone. And I think that's what, when the convoy happened down to Wellington, I think everybody was so just blown away by the fact that there were actually hundreds of thousands of us.
And we wanted to be in that group.
Yes, yeah. And we suddenly all came alive. And I remember standing on the bridge at Mercer just watching it happen. And after being isolated for so long, you think maybe, oh, there's 10 or 15 others, but judging by what the media says. But it's not. They were manipulating us into groupthink. And I remember reading a book at high school called The Wave by Morton Rue. And basically they set up Nazi Germany by accident in a school in America in the 1960s. And the exact same thing happened because the human nature brought the people into the safe group, into the larger group, and discredited anybody else through really nasty means.
I think that looking at myself, I have a sort of bandit or pirate mentality. I don't like crowds. I could never go to a rock concert and do what everyone else is doing. It just fills me with horror. I don't even go to like a rugby game because everyone yarring and yarring. I don't even like politics because it's sort of that tribalness and everyone going with it. And I almost have and I think this might be in a population in the old days, hugely advantageous to have everyone go along with the tribe, but also advantageous to have the odd rebel that doesn't go with the tribe. And I think I've got that in me. So I was an atheist when everyone was Christian, and now everyone's atheist, I'm a Christian. And like in politics, I could never be a member of the National Party, but ACT suited me because it's like a little party that everyone can dump on. It's sort of like being the rebel was where I'm comfortable. So I don't know how I got talking about that, but most people want to be in the group. I don't like that. I never have. I couldn't even agree with ACT most of the time when I was leader. Isn't it interesting? And then you got working with these wonderful people, the doctors speaking out on behalf of science. That must be like a dream come true.
Yes, it is actually. I love it. Yes, I genuinely love it. I just got in contact with one of the people I knew over in Tauranga, and we had a conversation. I said, hey, look, I can edit some videos for you or something, whatever you need. Just let me know. If you want me to interview some people, I can do that as well. Just whatever you need, I'm here to help. Just let me know. And the rest is history. I guess I can't leave the team. They're like my family. I genuinely adore working with them every day.
We're going to cover off two things. One is what's happening in Brazil, because that could be a foretaste. Because Brazil has a constitution identical to America, United States, as I understand it. It's like a free country.
Mm.
And we want to talk about your wonderful conference coming up in Christchurch. So tell us about Brazil.
Yes, it's an abhorrent situation is probably the lightest way I could describe it, I think, because what they're doing is if you haven't vaccinated your 5 and under child for the COVID vaccine, you get fined $1,000 Brazilian per day for every day that you don't do it. So they're financially crippling these families to force them into an impossible position, even though they don't want to do this, even though the absolute risk reduction is 0.4% and there is no long-term safety or efficacy data. They don't know how it's going to genetically alter these little kids with the mRNA, that kind of thing. And it's destroying families and breaking people's hearts. And what I noticed is that on one of the documents that I was sent through from a Brazilian, he's a freedom fighter over there, it said that this is so urgent, we need to skip the judicial process before irreparable harm is done to these children by not vaccinating them with the COVID vaccine. And so I spoke yesterday to some government officials as part of a team of people, and it's genuinely astounding, really, what's going on and the ignorance to the actual facts and the analysis of the data that these kids aren't at risk at all. And they're just forcing this gene therapy on a percentage of the population that has no effect really from COVID.
Under 5-year-olds.
Under fives.
What's the fine again?
So it's approximately $1,000 Brazilian. I can't remember the actual currency name at the moment. It escapes me, but it's $1,000 per day, really, which is up to 20 times the average income of these families who are being fined. So they're financially crippling them until they submit. It's pure tyranny.
They have got some tin pot dictator running Brazil at the moment, have they?
Well, they certainly seem to be protesting against this person, yes.
Because this is Elon Musk has got a battle.
He's
there
been
too.
Kicked out, yeah. And you can get fined thousands of dollars for using a VPN to access X.
Yeah, I think it's $8,000 a day, same thing.
Wow.
You would expect, would you not, the world to be issuing extreme pronouncements on behalf of the children of Brazil, because even if you're 100% on board with the vaccine, you'd have to say that fining parents a princely sum a day for not having them vaccinated runs against every convention on the child and any core sense of common decency. And of course, as you would have explained to the Brazilian officials, the science is against them. Has there been this great declaration on behalf of the children of Brazil?
It has not, no.
And I mean, I'm so naive, I kick myself. Because I'd expect literally the CEO of Pfizer and the board of Pfizer to be saying, no, we don't go along with this. We back our products 100%. But there's no way we can tolerate poor people being fined for not taking our medicine, our vaccine, nothing. They go along with it. They'll be happily driving the trucks in and flying the stuff down there.
They sure are. And I think it was interesting that even the Pfizer documents back in 2021 recommended that the children under 18 don't have it.
And we think of Brazil as an open and free country.
Yes, it's not anymore by the looks of it. And I think that's actually quite concerning, because an open and free country that we have heard about with regards to Brazil most of our lives potentially could be almost like a test dummy. So we need to be able to support these other nations so that it doesn't happen here, because what we've seen over the past few years has been very, very concerning. It's taken the power away from people. It's appealed to the monkey mind of the brain that rather than the logical part of the brain, and it's created a fear response and it's disempowering. And what's happening in Brazil is it's taking the power away from the parents. They have no rights. These legal documents that I was sent, they were from Child Protective Services fining these parents through the judicial system.
And here's us thinking, oh, yeah, the COVID thing's all over.
Not in Brazil, it's not. Well, the World Health Organization declared that there was no emergency last year, so I'm not sure what the urgency is that there's going to be irreparable harm to these babies.
What was the reaction of the officials? A, why did they let you speak to them, like your group, given they're tyrannical? And B, what was their reaction?
So it was difficult to see their reaction and understand their reaction because there was no translator back into English for us. The freedom fighting group over there, run by John Cage, he is he calls himself the Brazilian samurai, and he is just relentless, I guess, in the pursuit of exposing the truth. And he won't stop, I guess, until he can get an audience with all government officials. So this is part of his process.
Wow. Mm. And he's Brazilian?
Yes, he's Brazilian and Japanese.
The largest population of Japanese outside of Japan is Brazil.
There we go.
There's a huge influx of Japanese into Brazil at the turn of the 1900s, and hence Brazilian jiu-jitsu. That's why I know that. I went to Brazil, funnily enough, on a parliamentary trip with Winston Peters, and we went to Brasilia, the capital, which is inland, and it was a made-up city like Canberra. And it was wonderful.
It's a beautiful country.
Beautiful country, wonderful people. And I learned that in keeping, I didn't know this, I didn't know anything about South America, that they had a constitution modelled on the American system. So it was very proper, you know, proper democracy. And the funny thing, we were taken into the parliament and they were having this parliamentary inquiry, and it was horrific because we couldn't follow it because it's in Portuguese.
Mm.
But it was crowded with everyone speaking at once and everyone hot under the collar. And we wondered what, nothing like you could see in a New Zealand parliament. And we wondered what the issue was. It was causing this great consternation. They were having a parliamentary inquiry into why Brazil had lost the World Cup.
Oh, goodness. It's amazing.
Like, you just can't imagine the New Zealand Parliament inquiring into why the All Blacks lost.
No.
But it was that serious to them. And like, they weren't treating it lightly. Well, that brings us to your conference.
Yes.
In Christchurch. Because all the stuff to me is still real. And I now regard COVID as a warm-up.
Mm.
It's not like, thank God we got through that. It'll never happen again. So tell us when your conference is, who's going to be there speaking, what's the procedure, what's the mission, and how could we get to go if we were keen?
So we've got the Empowering Change conference coming up on the 21st of September in Christchurch and the 28th of September in Auckland, which will also be live streamed, and people can purchase tickets where they can view the live stream for a few weeks afterwards.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, oh, yeah. So cool. It was really the live stream was really popular last year. We had a lot of people who were overseas at the time and they couldn't make it and really enjoyed the conference and watching all the sessions. So there's sort of three options that you can attend the conference if need be. And we've got these absolutely incredible speakers from overseas. We've got Graham Hood, he is our host, event host and MC, and he's coming over from good old Aussie. He's flying across the ditch, as he said in a video that he did for us the other day. We've got Professor Angus Dalgleish, and he's one of the world's top oncologists
Oh, yes.
Yeah, so he'll be absolutely incredible. He'll be speaking on the things that he's seen and how what he's doing to stand up against it. Then we've got the wonderful Katie Ashby-Coppins.
the civil litigator. She is part of
yes,
yes, very, we very well. Katie, we all so do well. And all love her. She's a real hero. We've got
her case in Australia is so significant. Is
that
not?
The GMO?
Yes.
Yes, hugely significant. And if what is going on over there happens here, it's very, very, the case is incredibly important to set a precedent, but it's very, very concerning if it happens over here as well. Yes, so we've got Dr. Alison Goodwin and Dr. Matt Shelton, who will be speaking in Christchurch, and then also Dr. Emmanuel Garcia, who's part of our team as well, and he will also be speaking in the Auckland sessions. We have got Dr. Paul Marrick, and he's one of the co-founders of the Frontline COVID Critical Care Alliance with Pierre Corey over in the States. And he's, I think I could say, I'm pretty certain, if not, he is the most cited ICU specialist in the world, if not one of the most. So he is a very, very well-researched critical care physician or ICU physician. And he is speaking about patient empowerment and people empowerment and encouraging people in their own health. I think the theme of our conference is to be able to, it's not necessarily looking back at the last few years of what's gone on. It's looking forward to the future. It's acknowledging the past, but we want to be able to empower everybody who comes to look forward to the future, give them the methods of being able to reach people, the motivation of what's been achieved and what can be achieved if we all speak up together and use our collective voice to send a resounding no throughout our nation in particular. And then the evidence of that we are actually on the right side of history. So we've also got David Sharalambis, who he is a behavioural expert and neurolinguistic practitioner and behavioural science researcher and all sorts of different things. And he is really, really passionate about reaching people in a really effective way that takes them again out of that sort of irrational mindset and brings them into a logical framework where they can actually be reached. So that's something that'll be very, very useful for everybody, I think. So there's an incredible lineup there.
Just to start the conversation with your family and your neighbours.
Absolutely, yeah. Because what we're facing is concerning, and we need to be able to have those courageous conversations. And it is, that's easier said than done, because when we acknowledge the absolute manipulation, the sort of that's been very cleverly and sort of carefully crafted with that acceptable bigger group and that the unacceptable smaller group. Yes. It's a lot easier said than done, but David has this incredible way of being able to connect with people on a really genuine basis, and I think that is hugely powerful and significant going forward.
Well, you'll be busy, but you'll be on a high these days.
Very, very busy, yes.
So Christchurch on the 21st of September.
Yes.
Auckland on the 28th of September.
Yes.
I enroll on your webpage.
Yes, at nzdsos.com.
Yeah. And I can either turn up on the day with my ticket and get to meet everyone. I notice that you have a meet and greet, and I could apologise to Dr. Shelton personally. You can go online, and you don't have to do that live. You can do that subsequently to the thing if you can't make that day.
Yes, that's absolutely right.
And they are the two options, and you can go to Auckland.
Christchurch, Auckland, or the live stream.
If it's not too rude to ask, what does it cost?
So it's a fully catered day, which provides a lot of the cost. So it's $150 for the day.
Right. And when you say fully catered, what does that
include?
So you
get tea and coffee and morning tea, lunch, and afternoon tea. And then if you choose to go to the meet and greet, that's separate over and above, because that wasn't part of our day. Yeah, so the meet and greet's a little bit more.
That puts the price up enough. Got it. And what's the live stream cost?
The live stream is $45.
Wow. Well, that's
we've kept them as low as possible. Down. Yes.
Are you allowed to say where it's being held?
The Christchurch Conference is going to be held at the James Hay Theatre at the Christchurch Town Hall now. We had to have a change of venue there. And in Auckland, it is going to be at the Dewdrop Events Centre in Manukau. So that's right by the airport if you need to fly in. It's got great accommodation all around the place. Yeah.
The Dewdrop
yes.
confused me because I had a function at that recently and I didn't know what the hell it was.
It used to be the Vodafone Arena and they changed its name.
That's right. Yeah. And yes. It's like Dewdrop. What the hell? So it's the big
yes.
walker that you see on State Highway 1. And Dewdrop meant nothing to me when I went to it. How wonderful. Have you had trouble with accommodation?
For people?
Well, like, because you know how people are deplatforming anyone that has a view that's not, I mean, they're legitimate places. If I wanted to go there and speak out against queering of our kids, they wouldn't have me. If I wanted to go there and speak out against one law for all New Zealanders, I probably couldn't book a venue these days. And I was just wondering if you have similar issues.
I have not had any of those issues with the planning of the conference. We are, from the get-go, we say we're New Zealand Doctors right. Speaking Out Science in the DSOS. I actually even told one of them, the media aren't huge fans of NZDSOS, but we just sort of would love to be able to host our conference right here. And they were more than happy. And at Eden Park last year, they were absolutely wonderful.
Right. Well, that's very, very heartening to hear. Now, tell me this. The conference sounds great and they will be a must. Tell me this. What goes on inside a journalist's head now over COVID?
That is a very, very good question. I know that there are people within these mainstream media organisations who completely disagree with what has happened. And they choose not to speak out because they will lose their job. And that is a very, very hard thing to hear. Because if you're trained in particularly the way I've been trained, when you understand journalism, they always originated as seekers of truth and wanting to expose the truth. And they have gone in lockstep with the government.
And to question power.
Yes.
As the people's sort of fourth estate, you know, yes. like to be highly critical and question the use of power and the abuse of power.
The government and the media, they've colluded purposely, basically, to hack away in that subconscious mind. Using that repetitive content, I guess. So it's difficult.
There's a few journalists still around in their dotage who I knew when I was a politician and had to deal with as part of my aspirations. And I honestly can't understand what must be going on in their head. Because while they were all envious little lefties, they did try to be balanced and did try to write fair reports.
Some did.
Yeah. And now they're totally partisan hacks for big pharma and big government. And you know, if they introduced the Brazilian solution, which was to fine Kiwi parents for not vaccinating your kids when they're under five, they would be whooping it up.
Mm.
And anyone questioning it would be wanting to kill Nana. So I don't understand them.
Mm.
And I guess this is this thing that you're like me, you're a pirate or a rebel, and we happily sail off in our little boat.
Yeah.
And raise the skull and crossbones, not knowing what tomorrow will bring. And we can't imagine staying with the big mothership, knowing they're telling lies, but at least we can pay our mortgage. It's not possible for you and I to be like that. We couldn't live with ourselves. Actually, I'd know exactly what I would do. I would be with you on the pirate ship no matter my circumstance, because I have many times in politics risked everything for something that I thought was correct. And I couldn't live with myself if I didn't. So what would be the point? I'd rather be living in a tent down by the river than live in a nice house knowing that I had lied.
Absolutely. I told my kids when the mandates were happening.
Have you got kids?
Yes, I've got teenagers. So I've got two teenagers, and at the time they were a little younger when the mandates hit. And I said, look, things are going to get very, very perplexing for a while, a little bit difficult. But I have to tell you right now, I cannot sit back and say nothing when our nation is being divided into two. And I can't sit here as your mum and say that I did nothing about it when your future is on the line here. So these people who choose to say to stay silent in the face of tyranny, I can understand the absolute brainwashing that's gone on over the last few years. And I can understand the perspective that people have. But those who know and understand the truth and they do nothing, that's a really, really difficult position to be in on your last dying breath, I guess.
How did your kids react?
My eldest, it was very, very difficult. Kicked out of swimming, kicked out of basketball. They were questioning if he was allowed to play rugby at the time, but the mandates ended before that happened. All of those things. So he was suddenly, as both my children are very, very sporty, but not being allowed to play sports. But the oldest was allowed to play, not allowed to play sports, but the youngest was, even though we're in the same house. So that made absolutely no logical sense. There was no logic to it. It was an irrational decision brought about by propagandized communication. And my eldest struggled. But I also wasn't allowed to go and you had to supervise your children when they went to sports practices for swimming and basketball, and we weren't allowed in the actual arenas and the sports centres. So the youngest was only allowed to play outside.
I'm always having this conversation with my children because you and I both know it's not just COVID, it's almost everything.
Mm.
And I've had to explain to them that they live in I've actually used this word probably wrongly, but I've said at times your environment is toxic. And I've pulled them out of all the sex education stuff because of, I know it's almost useless, but I will not submit to them being taught that a boy could be a girl. But I know they get it everywhere else anyway. But that's my thing. And I explain to them why. And because I'm dead, they agree with me. They're still that young. And I notice that they appreciate it because they know, I think, that mum and dad will stand up for them, you know, that there are lines. And I had a very interesting interview with Let Be Kids founder Penny Marie. And I said, I don't know what I would do if a man walked in behind my daughters into the toilets or changing sheets. I've never been physical with anyone in my life, but I said I would drag them out. And she said, you should always do what would make your children proud of you.
Mm.
And standing up for principles and for them does that. And the irksome of missing a season of sport, terrible as it is nothing compared to the lesson that mum stood up for me. Because that's what you did, right?
Yeah.
And you can even say rightly or wrongly. In hindsight, we know you were 100% right. But it's a fact that you will stand up for them, particularly these days when no one seems to have any principles. So good for you.
Thank you. It's a lot easier said in hindsight than it was at the time. It was very, very difficult. Yeah.
It is. My one example was at the Arrowtown swimming pool. My kids were all under 12, but my son was of an age that he needed to be supervised to go swimming, and they wouldn't let me in. So my son couldn't swim.
Mm.
And it was so interesting. It was crazy because open air swimming pool, funnily enough, built by the community and a memorial to World War II victims. And so this great symbol of a swimming pool. But council regulations had meant that the community could no longer run it. So the council took it over and then banned everyone without a jab from going in. My son couldn't swim. And I could drop my daughters off and I'd stand there with all these other parents streaming in for swim night. And my son would turn to me and say, Dad, why can't I go in? And I actually teared up. And in that moment, as silly as it sounds, in a small way, I learned the humiliation you'd feel as a black man in the Deep South or in the apartheid area, where you're humiliated in front of your children and made different. And it's actually being humiliated in front of your, what was my son then, 7? I'll never forgive those bastards for that.
That's truly astounding, yes. You bring up the memorial to World War II. My grandfather was imprisoned in Nazi Germany for 4 years, and I can't. He fought for freedom and paid an enormous price with his for the rest of his life he suffered from what he experienced. Yes. And I can't sit back and allow the freedom that he fought for to be just taken away overnight by a government who don't appear to understand what the previous generations stood up for.
No.
And I understand that humiliation because I experienced it myself outside the swimming pool and being kicked out of a restaurant once. I forgot one day that there were mandates on and I was kicked out of the restaurant and told not to come back. It was a wild time. But we need to stand up and to be able to not allow that to happen again.
And this is why this conference on the 21st of September and the September the 28th is so important, because we need to be aware of what happened. We need to be aware of what is happening around the world, such as in Brazil. And we need to connect with each other.
Yes.
So that we're not caught alone, because it was at the start, they caught us all off guard. And we're going to be formidable next time they try this. Anna, I love your work.
Thank you.
I love what the doctor's speaking out on behalf of science done. I've loved hearing of your story. You're a very amazing woman, very, very brave. And I wish your conference every success.
Thank you so much.
And we will talk again.
Yes, and we really look forward to seeing you there.
Yeah.
Look forward to chatting in person, face-to-face, which is wonderful.
That is Anna McLaughlin from New Zealand, doctor speaking out on behalf of science. What a story. It's amazing, isn't it, to sail off on the pirate ship, away from the mothership, knowing that next time they see you, they'll try and blow you out of the water. Extraordinary. You're on Rally Check Radio. Remember, you can send me a text at 2057 or email me at inbox@rallycheck.radio. Thank you so much for listening. And aren't we truly blessed to have each other and to have such a wonderful guest as Anna, such a wonderful organisation as New Zealand Doctors Speaking Out on behalf of science. Truly, when the history of this black period of our country is written, they will stand peerless, those brave men and women who sacrificed everything for the principles of being a medical professional.
The RCR shop has great gift ideas, from great-looking tees, hoodies, caps, tote bags, bumper stickers and more. The RCR shop is now open at www.realitycheck.radio/shop.